Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Fine, thank you. As we wind down 2015, I have an idea.
What's that?
I think that we should thank a few people before we get into this episode with Shea Serrano, the former Grantland writer and New York Times best-selling author. What do you think?
I think that's a great idea.
All right. Who do you want to thank?
I want to thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Who else do you want to thank?
Greg Mayo, who does our theme music.
Okay.
And also is our best friend, and yes. It is also his birthday.
Well, happy birthday to him.
I also want to thank whoever didn't give me a drink before I started doing this, because my voice is sort of raspy, but whatever.
All right. Well, shouts to them.
Yeah.
Let's also thank Johan Chiriboga, who is nice enough to come through and film so many of these episodes. You can check those out at youtube.com/itsthereal. We should probably thank all of our sponsors.
Yeah, every single one of them.
All of them, you know, go to listen to the episodes and take advantage of those offers that are at the top of every episode. We should probably thank our agents at William Morris Endeavor.
There's about 30 of them.
There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Thanks to Ben Davis, who made this happen. And thanks to the Sideshow Network for making A Waste of Time with It's the Real Reality.
Yeah, thanks for wasting time with us.
And with that, let's get to Shay.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Gatorade Commercial, a.k.a. Thirst Trap.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Donkey Kong Level 2, a.k.a. Double Barrel.
Hey, I'm Shay.
Hey, and this is A Waste of Time and this is the Real. What's
going on?
Welcome to New York.
Thanks. Is that that's what y'all do in New York?
Yeah, strictly that. Right. How's it going?
It's all right.
Well, I'd say 2015 has been like better than just all right, right?
It's been a good year. Yeah. It's been pretty good.
Yeah, you put out your book.
Put out a book, and it sold a bunch of copies.
Yep.
And then I think that's the main thing.
Did you have any idea that it would do the numbers it did?
No, nobody did. That's why we ran out of copies. So fast, not even the publisher. They were surprised. It was supposed to just disappear.
Well, so I went to the panel that you had up here for the release of your book, which
right,
Jeff was on.
Works, yes. It was me, it was John Caramanica, mm-hmm. Wesley Morris,
Megan Garvey, Joe Zen. Anybody else?
No, that was it.
And it was moderated by your editor,
Samantha, yeah.
And on that panel, you said that initially when they came to you with the idea, you were like, Not really
yeah,
interested.
I don't want to do it at all. It sounded like who wants to read a book about important rap songs? Like, I don't want to do that.
I mean, a lot of people apparently.
Well, yeah, I think because it has pictures in it is a big thing.
Right.
But yeah, when they told me about it, and I was picturing it in my head, it was just like a regular, like a textbook with no anything else in there, just black and white. I was like, Africa Bambaataa. No, thank you. Like, I don't want to do that. And then yeah, it just took off out of there. So
that was your first trip to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And
you got lost.
I think no. You know what? We didn't get lost because they had cars taking us everywhere.
Gotcha.
If we tried to walk, then we got lost.
Like, I talked to you with your wife, and she said that like I think you guys were afraid to take the subway or had taken the subway and just got.
I don't want to take the subway.
Yeah.
I don't want to go underground.
Right.
We don't do that in Texas. You don't go under the ground in Texas. I'm not interested in that.
When you came up to New York that time, obviously, like you went in there early. You were in Housing Works, like, to set up and get ready and everything. Did you see the line outside at all?
Yeah, when we pulled up, that's what was the crazy part, because I got a text from the editor and she said, "Hey, there's a line out here already." And I was like, "Yeah, like I thought she was dicking with me." And then we pull up in the car and we get out and it's all the way around the block and the people are like clapping and cheering. And my wife was with me and she starts crying. Like, what is going on?
It was amazing.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great experience. There was no line for me this time when I got to
New York.
I was disappointed.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, so maybe
it's almost
next
like
time
you never landed in New York this time.
All right, let's take it back to the very beginning. Where are you originally from?
I'm from San Antonio. I live in Houston now, from San Antonio.
Right, but born and raised in San Antonio.
Right.
What was there to do growing up in San Antonio?
Nothing.
Okay.
We just played
no Twitter,
basketball.
No, yeah.
There's no internet.
Yeah, crazy.
You just play basketball, and then you like got in fights on the basketball court.
All right,
that was all.
What was the earliest age you went to the Alamo?
Ugh, they take you in like all your field trips.
Yeah, all your field trips.
Every field trip is to the Alamo in San Antonio. So probably like first grade or some bullshit like that.
Yeah.
But what about the Alamo Dome?
It's never exciting. The Alamo Dome is exciting. I think maybe like the mid-90s is when we started going there.
our brother Dan, who now works for the Garden, used to work for the Yankees, and before that worked for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And he was with the Cavs when they came down to San Antonio for the finals. And he went to the Alamo, went to the Riverwalk, and then went to his hotel. And he's like, "That's about it.
Yeah,
that's the checklist. That's what you do."
You're from a family of how many kids?
I have three sisters, all younger sisters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then like a bunch of cousins and aunts and uncles. We all lived in the same area, the same part of town, so there were...
It was like the Godfather. You guys like all owned one block.
Yeah, we were...
The complex.
It was like three blocks and we were all there, which is really cool. And sometimes it was less cool, like when I was finishing up high school, there was like 13 or 14 of us in the house. Mm-hmm. The uncles would show up.
Okay.
Because they got to live there and then they bring their kids or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was like a bunch of people around all the time.
And would you guys, like, if you were going to travel, where are you going, like, around Texas? Would you go to Houston? Would you go to Dallas?
We went on
Austin.
We went on one trip to Houston. I remember we went, I don't know why we went, but we went to Astroworld. But we didn't travel too much. Like, we would go camping, I guess, which is just right outside San Antonio. There's a lake there. But we didn't do a lot of traveling.
We have never gone camping.
Well, yeah, but Jews don't camp.
Jews don't camp.
Like, we went to Bonnaroo, and they gave us an RV, because we were just like, we're not going to sit in a tent with,
that's
like...
terrible, man.
No, we just don't have those skills. Oh. We're not built like that. Like,
okay. Yeah, our hands are very soft.
We can walk around the city, that's fine, but just, like, camping out... So, like, you're growing up learning about, like, bears and snakes and, like, anything else that's, like, out there that can attack you?
Well, definitely snakes. There aren't really bears in Texas.
No bears.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't camp.
Eric doesn't, you know, watch nature documentaries on Netflix like I do.
No, you don't. I mean, we weren't, like, a wilderness family. We would just go out there and then, like, hang out. You just start a fire and then you're dead.
But you built a tent or something, right?
We had tents. Yeah.
Okay.
There were tents. But they just sort of pop open. You put some poles in them. It ain't a hard thing.
But also, I mean, like, I wouldn't be afraid of, like, wildlife because there's about 45 of you
were a bunch of us. We were a gang. You know what we used to do, though? I remember when we got... I was, like, in middle school the first time they did this. We were hanging out. We were camping. And my uncles were with us. And they asked if we wanted to go snipe hunting. And I was like, what the fuck is a snipe? Like, I never heard of a snipe
before. Yeah.
I said, well, it's like a... It's kind of like a weasel, raccoon type thing. I was like, this already sounds terrible. You can't even describe what this animal is. But they said, we're going to go catch them. They're really easy to catch. What you got to do is you just go in the woods, and it's dark out there, and you start making a bunch of noise, and they get scared, and they run out, and then you grab them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, all right, I guess we're going to go catch some snipes.
With your hands?
We had bags.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Okay, so they're going to run into the bag because they need a place to hide. This is what they told us, right? So we go out there, and it's like me and three or four of my cousins, and they say, okay, the thing of it is they're not used to humans, so you have to cover your face. So we're going to put a thing over your face. Two of y'all are going to bang the pots. The other one, you just hold the bag on the ground, and they're going to run in there, and then you catch them. And we're like, I mean, you listen to what your uncle says.
Yeah, sure.
So we go, and you put the thing over your face. And I got the bag on the floor, and my other cousins, they just start banging the bang, bang, bang. We're screaming and making all this noise. And we're just going, and we're waiting, and then nothing happens. Like, not a single thing. And then they stop banging the pots. And it was with my cousin Jesse. Like, okay, Jesse, stop. And it took the thing off, and they were fucking gone. They just left us in the woods. We're 12 years old. We're wandering around the woods at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Like, just believe whatever they'll say.
Yeah, liars. A bunch of liars. Don't believe any Mexicans. They just
lie.
Oh,
my God.
What was your first introduction to hip-hop?
You know what? I think it was
2014.
Yeah, somewhere around there. No, it was. I was young. I remember I was in elementary, and I lived next door to this guy named. They called him T-Bone. Was his name?
Mm-hmm.
I think his real name was JT, and he was like a rap guy, and he had the Ghetto Boys album.
Mm-hmm.
But We Can't Be Stopped.
One, yeah,
Bushwick's eye hanging out of his.
Yeah,
head.
Yeah.
And I saw that, and I was like, I don't want to be a fan. At all. I remember that was the first album cover I saw. But then, like, as far as listening to music, I think probably Vanilla Ice was the first actual album I listened to. It was in the early 90s.
But what was your favorite song off that album?
Ice, Baby.
Oh, man. You should listen to the B-sides.
Well, I mean, we listened to all, like, Rice-A-Roni, Stop That Train, and Play That Funky Music. But, like, that album was going hard when I was 8 years old or whatever.
For a second when you said Rice or No, I was like, does every song have ice in it? Like, very worried.
It was a good album, man.
Yeah, no, totally. And
did you see Cool as Ice the movie?
I did.
Wow.
I did. That was one of my, I mean, he said, I remember he had the lines in his head on the motorcycle doing all kinds of shit. I remember the one line in it, he's like, you got to drop that zero
and get with the hero.
And I was like, oh, shit, I got to say that to every person from now on. And that shit never worked, like, one single time.
Until you got your wife.
Until then, yeah, she was like, all right, I get it.
By the way, watching that movie as an adult, not the same experience.
It's not very good.
No, it's just like seeing Star Wars, I think. Like, we just saw Star Wars for the first time.
Yeah, but wait, is Cooler Than Ice on Netflix or something?
It was on YouTube. They had like a rip.
Really?
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah, like I wasted a few
a
hours.
A good couple hours.
Yeah, like there's a part. I mean, none of it makes sense. It's stupid. Yeah,
it's.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean I don't want to ruin your childhood.
No, I get it. I watched it. I mean, I watched it like once a week. So
did any of your friends or did you rap like growing up?
Yeah, everybody tries to rap.
What was your rap name?
Oh, I don't think I had one. Okay. I was talking to my sister, the one right underneath me.
Mm. Number two.
Mm-hmm. Her name is Yasminda. We were hanging out for Thanksgiving, and we were outside the house, and we were rapping. You didn't, like, make up your own rap. You just rapped rap songs that you knew.
Sure.
So we were battling, like, Vanilla Ice battle.
Yeah, yeah.
In the front yard, and she beat me. And I thought I knew, like, all of this, and she just kept going. She was, like, really getting after it, like fuck it, like she was the brat, like she was just going hard. And so like I got so frustrated that all I could do is I just shoved her into a bush. Like, that was the only thing I could think to do. That was my first rap fight with my sister.
That was a rap battle.
Yeah, that was a real rap battle.
Did you go to public school or private school?
Public school.
And was it the same group of kids, like from elementary school all the way through high school, like all your friends?
Yeah, how big was your school?
It was a big school. It was the same group of kids from through elementary, and then at middle school I moved out. Like my family lived on.
Your parents were like, you need to be an adult.
Yeah, yeah.
You move out.
They kicked me out.
Go live in a tent.
And I went to go live with my grandma on the other side of town, so it was just me and her.
Yeah.
For middle school, so it was like all new kids over there.
Mm-hmm.
But
how was that?
It was terrible.
Yeah.
It was weird, like, because you were excited to go to middle school with all your friends because they're all funneled into the same school, and then I end up at this new school. And it's one thing if you move in the middle of the school year and you're the new kid then, because you're like kind of mysterious, right?
Sure.
You just are there at the beginning of school and you're the new kid. Nobody knows you're a new kid. You're just a kid with no friends.
So it's not like the movies where they like make that introduction of just like, hey guys, there's a new kid in class. Yeah. Shay, stand up and say something about yourself.
It wasn't like that.
And you were like, I'm Shay. I shoved my sister into a bush.
Yeah. So
I remember in 8th grade, I guess, in social studies class, like, I'm not new to school or anything. This is the same, like, group of kids every time, but the social studies teacher wanted to know something about everyone just to, like, sort of, like, get his bearings as to, like, who each kid was and where they sat or whatever. And so I guess we wrote something down about ourselves on a card, and he collected all of them, and he's going through them, and, like, I was in Sports Illustrated for Kids for, like, painting all of the baseball logos, like very
huge
large size,
yeah.
in our parents' basement. Our parents were like, if you clean up downstairs and you want it, because I was like, I want to paint like all the Major League Baseball logos on the walls. They're like, if you clean up, you paint the walls white, then you can do whatever you want with like the walls. We're like, cool. So my brothers and I painted everything white and then went about doing that.
Got all the credit for
it. I did. But I was in Sports Illustrated for Kids, so I'm sure I wrote that down or something to that effect as an eighth grader. And he gets all the things, and he's like, Eric Rosenthal? And I'm like, yep, right here. And he was like, likes to throw rocks at moving trains. Like, I don't understand. And I was just like, oh, like, ruined everything. But okay, so you're the new kid in school. Did sports or rap, like, help out in any way? Did that make you sort of, like, find...
Sports more than rap.
So what sports were you playing?
I was playing a lot of basketball.
Okay.
And football.
Yeah.
And, basketball was the main one, because everyone was playing basketball at the time, and we were all terrible. I thought we were really good.
And all Spurs fans.
All Spurs fans. I mean, not entirely, but mostly.
Someone wanted to, like, stick out and be like a Rockets fan? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, we had, like, before school starts, they got the courts outside, and you just show up early, and you get to play.
Yep.
And so that's what you did, and that's how you made friends.
How were you?
That was terrible. Really bad. I don't think I got good at basketball until, like, somewhere around ninth grade, I sort of figured out how my body was moving.
Yeah, yeah.
Before then, I was just falling a lot. And
you were Reggie Miller.
Seventh grade. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I played seventh grade. I played eighth grade. And those whole two seasons, I think I made one basket.
All right.
Out of the 2 years. And I was playing a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Yeah, but a lot of intangibles, though.
I didn't know, like, anything about basketball. I just knew if I was, like, trying hard and fouling a lot of people,
yep,
that I got to play. So I just was doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
So we would be in, like, the huddle, and the coach is drawing up a play. And we come out, and I remember a point guy's a guy named Jesse. And he was like, hey, what play did he run? And I said, like, I don't know, just throw me the ball. And like, that's all I knew. And it was really, like, it was fun. Football was not that much fun. Football, I got tackled one time, and I was like, I'm out of here. Fuck this game. This game hurts too much.
What happened after high school? Did you, like, go to college? What'd you do?
Yeah, I went to college. My parents were, like, super big on that because nobody in our family had ever graduated high school or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was getting close to the end of high school, my mom was telling me, like, you're either going to go to college or you're going to go in the Army. One of these two things is going to happen, so mm-hmm, you get to pick. And I was like, I guess I'm going to college.
Yeah.
So I just started applying to schools. I joined this, like, college prep program at my high school because there was a girl in it who I was, like, trying to hang out with.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And then that's how I ended up in college, was just because of by accident, basically.
Did she go to the same college as you?
She didn't. She didn't even end up going to college.
Ah.
A semester.
Did she go to the Army?
Yeah.
She went for, like, a semester and then dropped out. And I looked her up on Facebook, and she was doing, like, her life is terrible right now.
Really?
I was so happy. I just fell apart.
How big was your high school class, by the way?
It was a couple thousand kids. It was a big school.
Couple thousand?
Yeah, 2,000 or 3,000.
Was graduation forever?
Oh, I thought you meant, like, the whole school.
Oh, no, your grade.
Oh, shoot, I don't know, maybe 600 or 700.
I mean, that's still a lot.
Yeah, we did it at the Alamo Dome.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So one by one, you walk the stage?
One. Yeah.
Yo, that sucks being, like, in the S's or the R's like us. Like,
Yeah, it was not fun. What's crazy is, like, the school was 97%, 98% Hispanic.
Uh-huh.
So it was, like, 47 Aguilar, 36 Cortez. Just going like that. I get it.
Our school is, like, all Italian, and so we get, like, Piombino, Artuso, yep, you know, Maraglino,
Della Bella, yeah, Mezzancello. But also, by the way, so my brothers are twins, right? And so it's Dan Rosenthal and Jeff Rosenthal. And, you know, for how long?
Yeah, for our whole lives. It was, like, you know, school was, like, 13 years, but it was, like, 12 years we were. It was Dan and Jeff Rosenthal, like, together in the yearbook. And then Heather Rosenthal moves from Arizona.
Yep.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And luckily, so she split us up in the yearbook. But at graduation, she was a dummy, and they let the smart kids graduate first, like National Honor Society. And so Dan Rosenthal, then Jeff Rosenthal, yeah.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, so she didn't fuck it up.
Was there a bunch of kids in your class?
No. I mean, like, it was probably 220 per grade.
Yeah, mine was 162. And you always, by the way, or I do rather, I always remember who graduated 162nd. Like, the last person, like, you know, just like the not... I don't want to say he's dumb. He's a New York City cop now, but, like,
so
you know.
So pretty dumb.
Yeah.
I remember the kid who wore capris to our, like, pastel capris and J-Lo glasses to our graduation.
There you go.
It was a very strong look.
I also know there's kids who, like, just, like, want to fuck with their parents, and they're just like, fuck that. I'm going to wear shorts. I'm going to wear, like, you know, Crocs, right, or something like that. Like, yeah. It was like, you're dressing up for graduation, like, don't mess around.
When we graduated, they give you these little cards, mm-hmm, that has your name on it, and when you walk up, you hand the card to the guy, so they say your name right, and the order doesn't get
right.
Yeah,
kids. So there's this guy a couple of spaces ahead of me. His name is Brandon, whatever Rodriguez probably,
uh-huh,
and he, like, took his card and he scribbled on it, and then he was just, like, holding it and sort of laughing. And so he goes up there and he hands it to the guy, and the guy looks at it, and then he looks at Brandon, and then he looks over here, and he looks at the other people on the stage, and they're saying they're going, and he just leans into the mic. This is in the stadium,
yeah,
now. And he just leans forward and he goes, "It's that boy Brandon." And then the whole place, everybody's screaming. Brandon was a hero, man. I was so happy. That boy Brandon.
What was the Alamo Dome used for, like, for most of the year?
They used it for the rodeo and concerts. And
they have like monster truck rallies.
Yeah.
Did you go to those?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Every Sunday.
They're like $3 to go to or something.
Really?
What?
Yeah. If you take like a Coke can, $3 ticket or something, you sit up at the top. It was great.
Man,
listen, like New York prices, that's like $60.
So you look forward to seeing wasn't there like a really popular truck? Like it was a big like blue one.
Yeah,
there were a bunch. Gravedigger was my
Gravedigger.
Yeah, one. That's the one everyone wanted to see. Yeah.
And so would they have what else would they do down there? Would they play like high school like football game, like championship games
in
there?
And we didn't go down there too much. I mean, we're way on the other side of town. It's like a whole journey to get over there.
Okay, so you go to college. Mm-hmm. Where'd you go?
I went to this place called Sam Houston State.
Okay,
it's about an hour north of Houston.
Named after Sam Houston. And what was your major?
When I started, it was criminal justice. And that's why I picked that school. They were like one of the top two or three criminal justice schools in the country.
Yeah.
Right? So I went and I thought I was going to be like an FBI agent, like fucking Clarice Starling profiler type thing.
Yeah.
And so I started doing classes and I went maybe like 2 years and that was my degree at the time. And I started getting into the actual criminal justice classes, and then they showed us these photos one day of like crime scenes with dead bodies, and I was like, oh, never mind, this is very real, like, that's a dead person, I don't want to do this anymore. And so I switched it to psychology because I knew I wanted to be a teacher at some point.
Yeah
And then maybe I'm going to get into counseling or whatever, so I got a degree.
But then once you started looking inside people's brains and you were like, oh, no, this is too real.
Dead bodies.
Yeah, dead bodies. A lot of skeletons in the closet.
We got to visit. So there was an off-year election day, an off, like, you know, cycle election day. Yeah. 1 year. I got a knock on the door and I was like, Jeff and I had already voted that day. I wasn't going to, you know, answer the door, like, go away, right? Mm-hmm. And so whoever it was slid a card. It was like a business card, but folded over. It was like two business cards folded in half. Slid that under the door, and I look at it, and there's the symbol for the Federal Bureau of Investigation on there. And I'm looking at that. I was like, oh. I opened it up, and it was like, you know, there's information on the left-hand side and on the right-hand side. Someone wrote in, Agent Mayo, you know, stop by at whatever time it was. Please give me a call at this number. And I was like, oh, my God. So I immediately call them. And the guy's like, hey, me and my partner, whatever, agent, whatever, we're around the corner. We'll come back up. I was like, okay, sorry. I was, like, in the shower. I was at my computer, like, clearly, like, you know.
Yeah, you got the thing at the door. Yeah. But whatever. But so Eric does this. He calls the FBI and the FBI agent and says, like, hey, like, come on over. And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, you don't know who that is.
I was like, oh, my God, you're right. This guy's going to come rob us. Like, it's for sure.
Yeah. And so in the meantime, I look up the FBI's, like, main number, and I'm just, like, praying that someone answers the main line to be like. And so I call up, and I'm like, is Agent Mayo, like, a real person? Like, does he work for you? And they're like, hold please. And then they're like, immediately they're just like, so we can't confirm, but we won't deny that Agent Mayo. And so,
and just, I swear to God, just like a movie, right when they tell us that, the doorbell rings. And we're like, oh my God. And so if we were smarter people, we would have like opened the door just a little bit and been like, hey, can we see your badges and inspect it to the best of our abilities?
I wish Snapchat was around during this.
Yeah, just hold your phone out.
Yeah.
But they came in and they sat down and they're like, hey, excuse me, have you guys heard any strange noises in the last 6 months? And we're like, I don't know. And we went into this explanation where we're like, when they rebuilt this building, they put another foot of concrete in between, so it's really soundproof. When we play our music, like, very loud, no one complains. And they're just like, what are you talking about? Like, have you heard any strange noises from the apartment upstairs? We're like, no.
And so they said something about, like, do you know this person? Then they, like, said some name. And Eric goes, I don't even know if that's a woman or a man. Like, I don't know. I don't know. And so they were like, all right, well, the woman above you disappeared, and we're looking for, you know, some answers as to why or something.
And we're like,
oh, no, like, we just do hip-hop sketch comedy from our apartment.
And they're like, how do you make money? And we're like, what are you, our parents? Like, you know? And then after we agreed that they wouldn't, you know, take our TV in leaving, they left.
Yeah, they were cool guys.
Yeah, they were all right. Yeah. Agent Mayo and whoever. Yeah. Regardless of whether they worked for the FBI, they were looking for somebody upstairs.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that could have been you.
That could have been, no. Not when I saw those pictures. Have you ever seen a dead body? It's awful.
No.
It's terrible.
Definitely have not.
That's the worst thing.
D- did they offer any of those classes in high school for like criminal mm-hmm. justice and everything? So, yeah. And you took those?
Yeah.
And that's that gave you a little sort of...
Really good at it.
Really?
Yeah. Like too good.
Too good.
You were like Bones from the Fox show.
Yeah. I'm just looking at yeah. crime scenes. I figured it out.
So a couple years of that and then a couple of years of psychology. What do your parents think at that point?
They were excited. I mean, I was in college.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was the only one, and I'm talking like not just my immediate family, but like the whole entire family.
Yeah,
I'm the one that got out.
Wow.
And so I could have like come home and just taken a dump on the table, and my mom would have been so like, "That's a college dump." I did well. Like the first semester, I was like on the dean's list or whatever,
man.
And so there was nothing I couldn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
nothing I could do wrong. So
by the way, You're the oldest. You go to college. Do your three siblings go on and follow you and then go to college?
One
too?
Did.
Okay.
One right underneath.
Yep.
One I push in the bush.
Yep. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
She took that.
Yes.
Strength. Yes. That I gave her.
It was all a revenge story.
So she went. The one underneath her didn't go.
Mm-hmm.
I think she tried for a little bit. Then the one underneath her definitely didn't go. It was like getting worse.
Yeah. Well,
as we went down.
Does the youngest sister are your parents the most like lenient with her? Was
no.
it just like we spent all of our effort on the oldest three?
They were the youngest one. Man, I saw her on Thanksgiving, like on FaceTime, and it was the first time I'd seen her in months.
Well, where does she live now?
She lives in San Antonio.
Okay.
Also,
okay.
They got into like a big fight. Her and my parents did. This was a couple years ago, and she was like, "Fuck you guys, I'm out of here."
Wow.
And she was just gone. She's been gone since then. So, I mean, they're stubborn kids. You know?
Sure.
We're
yeah.
stubborn people,
are you Facebook friends?
No, she won't. She doesn't call. She's called me like twice in however many years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think the reason is when she called, I was like trying to get her to move to Houston.
Uh-huh.
She didn't have a job. She's living with her boyfriend, whatever.
Uh-huh.
But they were living with his parents.
Yeah.
And it's just like a real loser situation. And so I'm telling her, come to Houston. I'm going to buy you a car. I'm going to get you an apartment. You can live on your own, whatever.
Yeah.
And then I just, no.
Man.
There's a lot going on.
But so she FaceTimed you, and then since then?
Since
have you spoken or no?
No.
Man.
Yeah. It's a bad thing. You know, it's crazy. Is her boyfriend, when they were first going out or whatever, when she first moved in, she called me and he was in the background. And I was like, put that motherfucker on the phone.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know.
You were going to push him in the bush.
Yeah.
I was ready to kill him. And he was like saying, "Oh, I heard you did a rap coloring book. Nobody's gonna buy that shit." And I was like, "You motherfucker! I'm on my way to San Antonio right now." That's the only time I ever talked to him.
He was so wrong.
He was so wrong. He's very wrong. And he still didn't have a job. Like, I just want to rub it in his face.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Is that why you made the rap coloring book a success?
Yeah. Everything I've done in my life was because I was trying to put it in somebody else's face.
Yes.
How does the rap coloring? Because you were a teacher.
I was a teacher, yeah.
Okay, so you are teaching. How do you meet up with Bun B?
I was teaching, and I had become, like, I was freelance writing for a bunch of places.
Yes.
At the time. The way it works is my wife was a teacher as well.
Mm-hmm.
She got pregnant with the twins.
Mm-hmm.
And so the plan was she'd stay home for 6 months after the kids were born. We saved up our little bit of money for that. And then, like, halfway through the pregnancy, she went into labor. And they rushed her to the hospital. She had to get a surgery. And they laid her down, and they were like, "You gotta lay down forever till the babies come out. If you get up and walk around, they're gonna fall out." It's basically what they told her. If they come out now, they're gonna die. It was like, all right.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was very serious.
Yeah, that's like Thursday. A fraught. Yeah.
Yeah. So we said, okay, well, you just lay there, and we were using the money that we had saved up before the babies came, and when we were getting to the end of it, I'm like, well, you need more money. But try to find other jobs. I got a Target or Walmart or a waiter, but nobody would hire me since I already had a full time job. So I was like literally just Googling work from home jobs type thing, and writer was one of them. And I was like, I guess I'm a writer now. I started calling the newspapers in town, telling them I'm a new writer. And they're like, "You don't have the internet. Like, why are you calling? You can send me an email."
Yeah.
I was like, all right. So I started emailing them all, and then that's how I got started.
Well, and what was your first piece?
My first thing that I wrote was about the Texans, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
It was for this little tiny neighborhood newspaper. It's called the Near Northwest Banner. That this old lady was printing up in her garage with her husband, like a neighborhood newsletter.
Yeah.
With a machine.
Yeah.
They didn't have the internet.
And then she paid me like $15 or whatever to write it.
Yeah.
And I did that. And then I did another one about the Astros the next month. She needed a sports writer or whatever. And then I used those two, and I was like, fuck this old lady, I'm out of here. Used those two to move on to the next place, and which was like a slightly larger neighborhood paper. And then I went from there to the Houston Press, which is like the big weekly paper in Houston.
Yeah.
And then I was like covering rap for them for a good couple of years. Like when I was looking through the pages or reading the site, I saw nobody was really writing about rap very often. And I was like, well, I'm going to make this my thing. Houston's a rap city.
Yeah.
I can do that. I started going to all the shows and meeting all the local rappers. And that was like the easiest way to get on. People ask me all the time, what's if you're just starting out, what's the best way? I say, you got to like pitch local stories to local papers because now you're cutting out all the competition.
Yeah.
It's just a much smaller pool. You got a better shot. And so I did that, and I made like rap in Houston my beat.
Yeah.
And then that's how I met Bun. You know, you go to enough shows, you're going to run into
him. Yeah.
He's everywhere. He's literally everywhere.
He is.
And he reads everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like I had mentioned him a couple times or made this joke or that joke, and I was walking out of a show one day, and he called me. I was with my wife, and he's like, yo, Shay, what's up, dude? And I was like, oh, fuck, that's Bun B.
And he knows who you are.
Yeah.
Ran away.
And then, so, yeah, that's how that happened.
Wait, did you actually run away?
I did.
Like a normal person?
Yeah. We were at House of Blues. He was at the, there's like escalators to get up there, and I saw him, and he said hello, and I was like, oh, fuck, hi. I didn't know how to respond. It was like seeing a shark. I don't want to, you know.
First time we met Bun was probably back in, like, 2007, I think. He was a fan of our, like we did weekly sketch videos, right? Like for 3.5 years, and it was all over the blogs, like Not Right and everything. And he called us up one day, got our number, called me up. I was at the gym.
Yeah, it was a Wednesday morning. I remember that.
And he goes, hey, it's Bun B. First time, long time. And I was just like, this is unbelievable.
And we were like, how did you get his number?
And also like to hear, you know, your hero's voice on the phone talking to you is just like
it's weird, right?
It's the craziest.
Name come up. You've been hearing it in the speakers for so long.
Yeah.
And then now it's him. And he's so smart.
He's smart and funny and just genuine. And
everything he says sounds like he rehearsed it before.
Yeah.
Like no matter what you ask him, just some insightful shit.
Hey guys, we just wanted to remind you to please, please, please subscribe, rate, and comment on our episodes, which are all available for streaming and download on iTunes and SoundCloud, where you can find episodes like this one with Bun B, where he's talking about a very young Lil Wayne.
I remember me and Baby sat in the studio, and he's like, I want this kid to be great. I think this kid has the potential to be great. What do I do in order for him to achieve that greatness?
Yeah.
And I told him point blank, you have to make his life revolve around the studio. Whatever it is he wants to indulge in, he has to indulge in it at the studio. Right? If he wants girls, bring him to the studio. He's old enough now. If he wants weed, he wants liquor, bring him to the studio, right? So that when he leaves the studio, he feels funny, feels foreign, feels out of place. And the only place that he feels comfortable is the studio.
All right, so you saw...
That's, like, super manipulative, by the way. That's, like...
But I mean, but that's how you...
That's Pavlovian. That's, like... Every time you, like, you know, go to the studio, you get a girl. It's, like...
I fuck around and get Svengali sometimes.
Yeah, you know. Jesus.
And look what happened.
And now back to our conversation with Shay Serrano.
So you're moving around the rap shows and everything, and you're going to like Slim Thug shows or like Dobeezy or
Paul Wall and
Do any like stand out to you? Are you like, you know, were there shows that you really like wanted to go to and made that your sort of
all of those guys mission? that you're mentioning? Yeah, there's a really strong group of guys, like 10 guys there who are really good. Dobeezy is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Propane, D-Lo, Less, Hoodstar, Chance. Like these guys who are sort of at the top of that level.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to those shows and it was fun. My favorite one I went to is this guy named Hoodstar Chance, who's not very popular right now. He should be very popular. He's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like the most exciting rap show that I had been to ever in my life at that point, because he was just up there going, and like he's like a not very tall, maybe like 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
But he's like a thin guy, and he's doing like his body is just going forever. And he was rapping some song, and the crowd was there, and they're all going crazy. It's a small group, it's like 50 people or whatever, but they were really packed in tight.
Yeah.
Most of the time they're backed off and not doing this one, they were all up in there. They knew that he was going to do a good show. And he started going rapping, and some lady there, she's probably 25, maybe, she looked like, she just jumped up on the stage. She wasn't supposed to be there. She just got up there, and she, like, grabbed the mic from him and started rapping his song, like, to him and to the crowd. And it was the first time I'd seen anything like that.
Yo.
Really, like, after that, I want to go to all of his shows.
Yeah. Like, and would you do, like, if...
You know that that doesn't happen every time he has a show.
It doesn't, no. Yeah.
It's just, like, the same girl comes up, and you're just like, wait a minute, is she a plant? Yeah.
Did you go to all the, like, if Mac Miller came into town, or if, like, you know, Jay Electronica, or whoever, like, would make the rounds, like, and came down to Houston?
Jay Electronica.
I just assume at some point, like, he would show up somewhere that wasn't...
I like
he
to think...
only exists in...
Yeah.
In clouds. Yeah, I started out with the smaller guys, and then, you know, after a while, the editors, they get to trust you, and they say, okay, well, Mac is coming, or Jay-Z is coming.
Yeah. Are you writing every week at that point?
I was writing, like 5 times a week.
And you're still teaching.
At that thing, yeah.
And your wife's still laying down.
Oh, wait, you were writing for the Village Voice property, right? Yeah, gotcha. Yeah. What was it called? It's the Houston Free Press, is
Houston
that right?
Houston Press.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so do they at a certain point recognize you, besides like Bun, like are there guys who are just like, hey, I fuck with this guy's writing and I want him to sort of cover me? Like, are publicists reaching out? No. Oh.
Nobody.
Eric wants to know what Houston rappers are nerds.
Nerds? Shoot. I don't think any of them.
I mean,
these are intimidating guys.
Yeah.
They all got some history.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe Mike Jones is the kind of a nerd. But the other ones are, nah.
And so at what point does your writing get the attention of someone like Bill Simmons or David Cho or Sean Fennessy or whoever brought you into Grantland?
That came a couple years ago. When I was at the press, I did a thing on this rapper named Trey the Truth.
Yep.
And he had been banned by the radio station in Houston, and then by like all of Radio 1 properties or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't playing his music. And so I wrote a big story on that. It was like a cover story, right? And that was the first thing I did that got like national attention. A bunch of places were talking about it.
Yeah.
And so after that, I flipped that into like, okay, well, I'm going to go from the press now to the Village Voice or LA Weekly. And those are bigger papers. And then, you know, you're just trying to work your way up.
Yeah.
When you're writing, you got a list of places you want to write for, and you're just sort of ticking them off as you go. And so at the time, I was with I was doing a weekly column for LA Weekly, and I wrote a silly thing about having sex with my wife while listening to rap or Drake specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And that thing spread all over. And this woman named Molly Lambert, who was at Grantland, I guess she saw it and she liked it, and she sent it to the people and they liked it. So she sent me a message. She was the first one to reach out. I have it saved on my phone like a screenshot.
Yeah.
It was in July of 2012, I think. And she said, I saw this thing, and do you have any interest in pitching Grantland? And by this point, Grantland was already out of there. They've got New York Times people. They got a Pulitzer Prize winner.
They have Rembert Brown.
Yeah. They've got like all of these amazing writers who are at the top of wherever you're supposed to be. And so I was like, I want to pitch. I never even considered the idea. And so that's how I got started, was Molly.
And
I like this. You got started with Molly.
Yeah.
By the way, Molly's brother, Ben Lambert,
manages
Freddie Gibbs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're still teaching at that point.
Still teaching.
Do your kids have any idea what you do on the side?
I think maybe by like 2013, it was unavoidable at that point anymore.
Yeah.
What ended up happening was, I did this thing where I was like on the video chat or some sort of thing with ESPN. We were talking about basketball. And there's an app on Xbox One or whatever. It has like ESPN thing on there. And my video was up there. And some kid from the football team that I coached saw it. And he was like, what the fuck? He researched it and then he told everybody. And then after that, it just sort of spread around.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's sort of at the point now where like, look, kids are going to like find whatever they're going to find on the internet whenever, right? Mm-hmm. So like even if you weren't, you know, writing, if you were just whatever your history is, like I assume kids are going to just Google whoever their teacher is and find out their history anyway, right?
Yeah.
So they find out you're a writer, and does that make you cooler? Does that make you...
They didn't care.
Okay.
They didn't care too.
Did administration care?
No, they didn't. They thought it was cool. I rarely wrote about the kids.
Right.
If I did, it was always like this, like very positive thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And
some sort of life lesson type.
One of the
you weren't like these idiots.
Yeah.
one of the things you did was a video series around the football team that you were coaching.
Yeah.
Now, by the way, one hit and that ended your football career. Mm-hmm. In terms of
actually
one,
playing.
Yeah, wanted to be into it. But now you're coaching football.
Yeah.
Those kids were how old?
They are 14.
Right. And the video series was your idea or Grantland's idea?
Yeah,
or...
I pitched Grantland the idea about covering the coach and the team.
Yep.
The Tuesday Night Lights column.
Yep.
And I pitched this guy named Chris Ryan.
Yep.
And he was like, yeah, this is a really good idea. Texas is a big football state, and, you know, yeah, do it. And so I did one, and it did really well. Like, as far as the response goes, I started getting a bunch of messages. People were excited about it, again, because it was a very positive thing. And it also helped that our team that year was fantastic.
Yeah.
And we were just destroying people. So we went, like, undefeated.
Thanks to the coaches.
And steroids.
Yeah. Thanks to our quarterback, who was fucking incredible. And so we ended up winning out. And when we got to the end, I asked if I can... I got a guy in Houston who does video. Can we do, like, a Friday Night Lights knockoff with these kids?
Yeah.
So we did that.
And... in your mind, did you ever consider, like, while you're in the middle of doing both of these careers, that you might choose writing over teaching?
No, I knew I wanted to be a teacher for a long time, right? When I was a kid, I knew I wanted to eventually become a teacher. It just seemed like an important job. I wanted to be part of a community. I wanted to be there for a long time. I wanted to have a kid come to me like, oh, you taught my dad, like that sort of situation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so I never considered leaving writing. I mean, leaving teaching for writing, especially even when I started, like, to really get out there, or, like, I'm measuring the money I'm making, and I'm making more money writing than teaching, and I still, like, that's still just a part-time job to me type thing. And it wasn't until there's a guy at Grantland at the time, his name was Dan, who's, like, the nicest person you ever met, but he's super slick.
Mm-hmm.
And so you talk to him for, like, 2 minutes and you're just gonna do whatever he wants you to do, that sort of situation. And so I was like, I'm never gonna leave writing, there's no way this is gonna happen. And I got on the phone with Dan for you know, a couple of minutes, and I was like, fuck these kids, I'm out of here. I'm gone. And so, yeah, so then they I started a part-time contract, and then that went well, and so they offered full-time contract, and then here we are.
And
by the way, so you saying Dan is like the nicest person in the world, I was very off put the first time you reached out to me, because you were the nicest person. I didn't know what to do, like, because nobody really operates the way that you do. Like, you were calling me your best friend, and I was like, have we met? Like, I didn't. It was very confusing to me. And I was like, you know, you asked me, I think, to you drew my picture for the coloring book.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you sent it to me, and you were like, "You're my best friend. Can you interview Bun B and for New York Magazine?" And I was like, "Absolutely! Like, literally anything you want, I will do." Like, it was the nicest. I just didn't know what to do with it, though.
Yeah.
I even asked Bun. I was like, "What's this dude's deal?" Like, I was like, "Is he just like a nice guy?" And he was like, "Yeah, like he's just a teacher, and he doesn't operate like you New York guys. He's just yeah."
He's like, "I don't know. Every time I see him, he runs away." It's very strange. Yeah.
I think Bun called me a cynical asshole on the phone. Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds right.
At what point are you like? Do you share with your wife that, you know, maybe this writing gig is going to be the main focus? Like when Dan reached out and said.
Yeah, I mean, I talk to her every day, so...
Well, sure.
So she knew what I was thinking. And then she's like the one person who she's going to tell me what's actually a good idea.
Right.
And I got a bunch of people who are telling me things they want me to do just because it's going to help them somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But she was not, you know, she's not like that.
So everyone knows that Grantland, unfortunately, died a sad death recently.
Yeah.
Look, there were so many loyal fans and readers and everything, and, you know, a lot of people consider it sort of like a cult thing, but there were just pieces that went crazy viral. There's a lot of amazing work that was done there.
There's amazing work.
But when they announced that Grantland was going to end, all these people came out of sort of the woodwork, and it was trending everywhere, and there were all these pieces, you know, just sort of, you know, very, very sad and reminiscing about whatever the 4 years
was. Like,
the 4 years
it was like
whatever.
People had lost a part of themselves.
What did Grantland mean to you as someone who was in there?
It was, it was the best thing. It literally changed my life.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a joke or hyperbole. Before I started at Grantland, we were trying to buy a house. We lived in a townhome. It was me and my wife and my 3 kids. And it was too small for us. It had 2 bedrooms. And we're a growing family. We don't have a yard. The kids need to play. And I was teaching and freelancing. And we couldn't get a loan for a house. They don't care about the freelance money because it's not steady. And you don't make enough as a teacher to afford a house in Houston.
Right.
And so we just couldn't get a house. We didn't have a house. I don't even think at the time I had a car. we had one car for the family, and I had an old car that had got broken down or whatever. And then Grantland came, and they gave me a contract, and now I have another salary. And all of a sudden, when I have this to show the people, they're like, well, here's all the money you need to buy your... We bought a house. That's like, I got hired in July. By the end of July, or by the end of August, we had a house and a car. And it was like, everything changed. Now I'm flying across the country to go to this place or that place to meet with this person or that person. Like, I've never done any of this stuff. And so, and there was no reason for them to pick me up. I felt like they just sort of did it and put my stuff out there. And, you know, I mean, it was incredible.
And what was the big difference between Grantland and other places that you worked for in terms of, like, editorial?
Well, the guys there that I was working under with, it was Mark,
mm-hmm.
and Dan and Sean and Chris and Juliet.
Yeah.
These are, like, the smartest people, you know? We, you sit down at a meeting with these people, and it's, like it's super intimidating when you go there. And I guess because I was on staff, all the other places I was just freelancing. So you turn something in, and there's, like, oh, I changed this or I changed that. Like, every once in a while you get that. I had it at LA Weekly with this guy named Ben Westhoff.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm. He's a really smart guy, and he was helping me a lot, too. And then when I was at the press, I had it with Chris Gray, who's my guy there. They were I could feel them trying to make me better writers. And then at the other places, it was just like, turn it in, great job, whatever.
Yeah.
But then at Grantland, and now I'm a full-time guy, like, they're really trying to help you out. They're really shaping stuff. They're responding to emails or whatever, you know?
When people, like, change your words for the first time, is that, like, a weird thing for you? Like, when people say, okay, this isn't perfect, like, you know, because most editors will just sort of throw it up, like you said, and just say, like, this is good. So when somebody starts changing your words around, is that... How do you react to that?
I was excited, you know? The edits never... Anytime I got edited, it never bothered me. Because I knew that there was not an editor who was like, I'm going to make this worse on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Every time something was changed, it's because they thought it was going to be better. And then at Grantland, when they changed it, it was like really actually better.
Mm-hmm.
A lot better.
Mm-hmm.
We'd turn a thing in, and Sean would add just like two words here or one sentence, switch it. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is way better this way. And so I'm trying to see how they're changing it. What Mark is doing, what Chris is doing with these things, and then the next time I write it, okay, I'm going to do it like that. And then, you know.
Yeah.
It was very collaborative.
Yeah, I only ask that because, like, those are some, like, fantastic editors. I have had bad editors in the past, including one who, when I was writing for Rolling Stone a lot, and I interviewed Meek Mill. And this guy, first of all, didn't know who Meek Mill was, but then also... He asked me if a mixtape was the same thing as a track. And I was like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
Did you have a favorite piece over all your time at Grantland?
I don't think so. The thing of it is, when I write something, before I turn it in, it's like the best thing I've ever written.
Sure.
That's ever been written by anybody.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as I send it, like 30 seconds later, I'm like, oh, this is fucking terrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen. I'm going to get fired. They're going to finally figure this out. So it's, when it's up, like, I don't even look at them beyond to check what was changed. I hate them. I hate everything that everything you read, I like hate it.
Yeah.
By the time it gets out there.
What got the biggest reaction of all your pieces in your estimation?
I did a thing about which rapper you should or shouldn't fight.
Right.
With like a chart.
Yep.
And that one was... That was a big one. I think maybe that one, or I wrote a thing about J. Cole.
Uh-huh.
Yep. I went to a J. Cole concert and was like asking people why they like J. Cole.
Right.
That one was another one. And maybe I did a thing about quarterbacks, fictional quarterbacks or something. Oh, no, Sandlot. I did a thing about the Sandlot.
Yep.
And that one was probably, as far as they got a little like Facebook shares or whatever, like that, yeah. I think that one had the most out of all of them.
So I want to trace your, you do not like J. Cole.
I don't.
Yeah.
As a rapper.
Yeah.
As a human, he seems like first class.
First class.
Like the fantastic. Yeah. Everybody should be like J. Cole. He just does nice things for people.
Well, and that was really the crux of your piece when you went to a J. Cole concert.
Yeah. Yeah, you had like a real like reckoning with yourself.
Yeah. Because, I mean, he does so much good. You read all of these different stories of there was one about the graduation he showed up to, like,
yep.
4 years after he said he was
going to... Promised, yeah.
Something like that. It was one about a guy who said he was going to kill himself, and then he heard whatever J. Cole said in the song.
Right.
And he changed his mind about that. I mean, he's doing, like, serious things. He's marching, protesting. He's doing real action.
Yeah, right.
Better stuff as a human than I will ever do. And he's just a good person. I would love.
Have you ever met him?
Friend. I haven't.
Like the first time we met him.
Yes.
So it's his first listening party under Rock Nation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on the Lower East Side at La Poisson Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
Eric and I go down there and we're standing in line to get inside. And this guy comes up and he's like, yo, just want to make sure you hear the mixtape, you know, like I'm
and by
really
the way,
big fan of yours.
We get like offered mixtapes all the time. Like we can't do anything for anyone. Like, you know, we're tangentially in the music business, but like people right. are just like, yo, put me on, listen to my stuff.
So this guy hands us some mixtapes and we're like, like you keep those. We're going to listen inside, right? Because it's a listening party. And the guy then introduces himself as J. Cole. And we're like, sorry.
Congratulations.
Yeah, good work. So we basically sunned J. Cole. By the way, every
time since then, it's been really like the nicest guy, like comes up to us and shows love.
Yeah,
and
everybody says, when I was writing the thing, I sent some texts to some people who are like either friends with them or mm-hmm. I work with them. And I was like, is this guy for real? Like, mm-hmm. And they all said that he's the best person I've ever met.
Yeah.
Everybody who I asked said that. And these are guys who are with him every day.
But his music's just not for you.
But his music is just not for me. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do anything. A lot of people are like, oh, he's so insightful or whatever. But I listen to it and it's like, he's insightful like the way a fortune cookie is insightful. Like... you're saying a thing that everybody knows. I get it.
And doesn't even provide lucky numbers on the back.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember we got a fortune cookie one time that said, order dessert now, you'll be hungry later. And I was like, that's pretty good. That's all right.
Wait, did you listen to New York rap? Not that J. Cole is really from New York, but did you listen to New York rap? I know you have like an anti-New York bias. like you said that you were passing out UGK CDs while you were here to fix our ears. Yeah.
Y'all are pretty bad right now. Yeah. Y'all used to be really good. It used to be good, and now it's like Troy Ave or whatever.
First of all, no, it's not. It is not that. Eric and I are big proponents of Chink's Drugs. We listen to French Montana.
Yeah.
There is
good New York rap.
Yeah.
French Montana's biggest song. That is a ripoff of a Houston rapper that popped that song. Like, there's a guy in Houston who did that exact song a year or two before him.
Really?
Exact same thing.
Who is that Houston rapper?
DJ Chose.
DJ sure. Chose.
Never
DJ
heard of him.
French Montana has heard of DJ Chose. I can't. It's the same song. Listen to it. The pop that song. It's like, you hear it. Oh, this is awful.
Have you seen DJ Chose shows?
Yeah.
And?
Great.
Oh, okay.
Great.
Does any girl run up and steal the microphone?
Oh, no. I don't know. Not
what would happen if your children grow up to be J. Cole fans?
Then I'm gonna drive my car off a bridge. No, you know what?
What's worse, being a J. Cole fan, your kids being a J. Cole fan, or your kids growing up to be like Dallas Cowboys fans?
Probably Cole. No, you know what's...
America's rapper.
This is the reason I like rap so much. Really, any sort of art is there's supposed to be people who don't like what you like. And you're supposed to like things that other people don't like. Like the Big Sean album that came out at Dark Side Paradise. I love that album. I think it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another writer named Jeff Weiss.
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's like, this album is terrible. Like, but that's my guy because you should be around smart people who don't like things you like and they can explain to you why they do. I mean, that's the whole point of this. You're supposed to argue. I would hate if I woke up tomorrow and everybody figured out, oh, you were right. J. Cole is terrible. That would be the worst thing. Like, I don't want that to happen.
Yeah, then you're just like Charles Manson.
Exactly. I don't want to be Charles Manson. So I don't want my kids grow up. I don't want them to like all the same stuff I like. They don't like sports at all. They can't stand sports. And
I mean, it shows. I've seen your posts.
Yeah, like, good. Don't like it. Like what you like. And then, you know, I mean, that's how the world should work.
Did you go over to your parents' place for Thanksgiving? And if you sit down for Thanksgiving with them or like extended relatives who haven't seen you for a minute, do they fully understand what you are doing for your career?
They don't.
Okay.
they don't care. But I told my dad, I made it on the New York Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
Like, wow, what is that? I got in the San Antonio Current,
yeah,
which is like a tiny little paper there.
Sure.
And he called Like, that's the only time he called. He's like, yo, I saw you in the current. Oh, cool.
It's that anti-New York bias.
I know. In terms of sports, you've had an amazing run down in San Antonio.
Yep, yep.
It's with the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Did you guys have a USFL team or something like that? Like,
no.
Back in the day? Okay.
An XFL?
any junior football? But in terms of basketball, look, any bounce of the ball could have had Tim Duncan, you know, go to the Celtics or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You guys lucked out. He's beaten Father Time. Every year you guys are not only competitive, but you've won a million championships.
Right, right.
Like, people don't even remember Sean Elliott at this point. It's like, just, it's Tim Duncan's town, right?
Yeah.
Like David Robinson who, right?
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, listen. Is he the best Spur ever?
Who, Tim Duncan?
Yeah.
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 It's not even close.
Yeah. There.
What about the Admiral?
he's a beloved figure, but he's not Tim Duncan.
As he gets older, and now you guys, you know, got some younger players, Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like, obviously I'm sure you feel like you're in good hands for the next, you know, number of years, but is it going to be the same when Tim Duncan retires?
No, it's going to be awful and terrible. The thing of it is, though, like, we've been good for so long. I'm on the team.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
I've been trying to get, if you go on the Spurs website, you can fill out applications to work for the Spurs, like Nacho vendor or whatever, but I fill one out every year to put point guard on there. And never even returned my email. But they've been good for so
maybe
long.
Went to spam.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's probably it. That I'm kind of ready for them to be bad because I don't know what that's like. You know? It's been so
wow. That's like a humble
so
brag,
long.
I think. Or, no, I think it's just a braggle brag. Like that's just,
it's just a brag.
We've been so good for so long. I just
yeah,
it's like, just I'm exhausting.
I'm ready. It is like you're up here for. Ever,
yeah,
and it's like it's a lot of pressure, you know? And it would be nice to not have that when he retires, and then him and Manu are going to leave at the same time.
Yeah,
Tony probably stick around for a couple more years.
Well, that's why they need you as the point guard.
That's why they need me. They'll be, you know, whatever 48, 52 win team during that time and make the playoffs, second round. But that'll be, you know, it'll be whatever.
What did you feel when the Oilers left town?
I wasn't in Houston at the time, so I didn't.
But you were
care too much.
You were an Oilers fan, or like, what did you grow up?
I didn't really have a football team until the Texans showed up. I mean, I was watching football. My dad was a big Cowboys fan.
Yeah.
My mom was a Redskins fan just because they were not the Cowboys. So I was like stuck between there, whatever.
Seems a little bit like Cowboys and Indians. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was like, well, I'm going to side with my mom on this one. Like, Redskins. I got Redskins. The year they won the Super Bowl, I had it shaved into my head. The barbershop Redskins in the back.
Like 91?
Yeah.
Mark Rippon?
Before, and this was before, like I called the shot. Before they played in the game, I got it.
Wow.
Yeah. And
by the way, thank God they won.
Yeah, for real. Bald head. Forever. So, I didn't care too much about what team was winning or not winning until I was in Houston when the Texans franchise started, and I was like, now I got to.
Yeah.
Now I have a football team.
Sure.
Do you have any tattoos?
I have 7 tattoos.
7?
Do you?
7. I was getting all of the members of the Wu-Tang Clan, and it hurt too much to get the last two. I was like, fuck you guys. Like, you don't get any spot. No, I don't have any tattoos.
Eric has every MLB logo.
No, we like to say that there's two things that are forever, tattoos and regret. So, mm-hmm. You know. Have you ever spoken to Bill Simmons about, like, success on that level in terms of, like, sports franchises? Like, clearly, the Patriots are, you know, the standard bearer, and he's, you know, he wrote a whole book on, you know, what it's like to sort of deal with the Red Sox not being, mm-hmm. and then they become just
dominant.
Yeah.
Have you spoken with him about, like, you guys being the basketball version of that?
No, not really. No.
Have you spoken to Bill Simmons?
Never. Not once he's that. No, we've talked a few times.
Have you played basketball with him?
I haven't. We mostly, when I see him, it's like, we were either in the office or getting drinks afterward, type of hanging out.
Sort of situation.
He's the nicest guy.
Yeah.
You hear all these rumors. I remember reading about how crazy he was on the internet from whatever people.
Yeah, blind items put out by ESPN.
Yeah.
And so you meet him, and I'm expecting him to be like an asshole.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And he's the nicest, most supportive person as far as a boss goes. Like he was your guy. This is the sort of thing that happened. Again, I had never been in a situation like this. We're talking about you're at the top level now.
Yep.
And this is probably the most famous writer in the country. Definitely the most famous sports writer.
Yeah.
And he just is like, yo, welcome to Grandland. I'm glad you're here. All I want you to do is worry about writing. That's all you have to do. Don't worry about traffic. Don't worry about criticism from anybody else. Like, just do whatever work you want to do, and I'm going to take care of every single thing else. What do you need for this to happen? Like, and you're hearing it from this guy who's supposed to be this tyrant, and is this, like you're saying, is this a front? Is it, and then for 2 years, that's all it's ever been, and he'll just pop up every once in a while and say some real nice stuff to you and then disappear and, like, pop up and tell you a thing you wrote 6 months ago was really good. Try to do, you know.
Yeah.
Just the nicest guy.
That's very special.
Yeah, yeah, it really is. And that's why you talk to anybody who was at Grandland and they're just devoted to him. Like, that's just...
Yeah. Where were you when you found out that Grandland was closing?
Was it sitting in my backyard? Yeah.
Were you on that phone call with...
I was going to say, were you on the playground that you had the swing set?
No, were you on the phone call with Chris Connolly when he told everyone?
Yeah, I think everybody was on the phone call.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think the future held for you?
I thought... I was sad that it was happening. I think at that point, everyone was sort of anticipating it was going to happen eventually.
Mm-hmm.
We're just waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we got the message, hey, be on the phone at this time... Okay, this is probably when it's going down.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't thinking too much about anything at the time. More than anything else, I was worried about... I knew all the writers are under contract.
Mm-hmm.
And
including you?
Yeah.
You're an ESPN employee?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there were some people who weren't under contract, and so I was like, well, what's going to happen with these guys? You know, mm-hmm. I mean, if nothing else, I could have gone back to teaching the next day. I have a really good relationship with the school that I was at, and I'm eventually going to go back there. At some point, you know, that's just where I need to be. And
would you teach criminal justice?
No. So I was like, you know, you're sad that it's gone, but you understand. And I can't be anything other than grateful to anybody who gave me that chance. Like, again, it changed everything about my life.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be sitting right here without Grantland. So.
Yeah. And what does 2016 hold for you?
I don't know.
Do you have another book in the works?
I do.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Can you talk about what it's going to be?
It's a basketball book.
Dope.
Yeah.
Oh my God, are you doing the Bill Simmons book?
Part two. It's going to be a basketball thing, and we've just now got all this stuff situated.
Do you have the same editor? Is Samantha editing this mm-hmm. too? So she has the same interests as you then? Or is she? Okay. Really. You don't need that?
Like, do you need me doing. To write an excerpt again?
I do. Yeah. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, thank God.
So you did that reading at Housing Works, mm-hmm. and what you did was you had a bunch of writers on stage with you who had contributed to the book, and you asked us to basically, because the way that your book works is that you chose the best song from every year.
Most important
song. Most important song, excuse me.
Right.
And then you asked a bunch of your writer friends to choose their own, what they think is the most influential song.
Mm-hmm.
And so John Caramanica has, like, what, LL Cool J?
Right.
And everybody, like, you know, on stage, we were supposed to argue our points. So there were probably five other writers. Every single person argues their point, and you immediately give up. And so I'm like, I come in the last one. I'm feeling I come in real hot. I'm like, you had chosen Macklemore, Same Love.
Right, right.
And I did Juicy J.
Bands Make a Dance.
Yeah.
2014?
12.
Okay.
I come in real hot. I'm like, I don't even have to worry because, like, Macklemore is so awful. Like, what do I have to, you know, really, like, talk about here? And immediately lose. Like, I was the only one to do terribly. I just want you to tell me, like, is Macklemore better than is Macklemore more influential, you think, still?
No.
Okay.
As a rapper, no.
Why couldn't you say that on stage?
But as a song, you can't argue with what Same Love did, what it wanted to do.
At that you also did a signing mm-hmm. there, and the line went crazy long and everything. did everyone ask you to do personal inscriptions, or did you get to decide what you wrote, or how'd that work?
Some of them would ask.
Okay.
Can you write this?
Or that? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Can you write "fuck J. Cole" on there? Like,
mm-hmm. And really? And would you?
Yeah. Whatever they told me to write. Some of them would say just quote a song or whatever. All right, I could do that. Like, I know a lot of songs.
But you'll be back in New York at some point. We'll tell everyone to line up.
Yeah.
Right. Greet you at the airport. That applause. And yeah.
Wait, while you've been here, have you visited the club where Tony Parker got glass in his eye or no?
I did. I have a dozen white roses. I laid them on the ground at the doorstep of the club.
I just saw that Eva Longoria is engaged to some other dude now. So,
wow. Yeah, he's going to be playing out of hurt, though, now.
Such a different time. Yeah.
He's about to average 40 points per game in a
yeah.
Yo, Shea Serrano, thank you so much for coming through.
All right.
All right. Hey, Jeff, not a bad year in 2015, huh?
Well, not for us, no.
If anybody is interested in listening to Waste of Time with It's the Real, go subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud. And if you want to find us online, we're available.
Yeah, I mean, we're around. Go find us at Twitter at It's the Real, Instagram at It's the Real, on Snapchat at It's the Real, and It's the Real Eric, because It's the Real was taken. And yeah, we're generally around. Please come say hi, and Happy New Year!